like to bring in this passage from Annie Dillard. It's from a collection called Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. And she wrote about the gaps. So I want to really explore in our practice today the power, the potency of the gap. She describes it this way. The gaps are the thing. The gaps are the spirit's own home. The altitudes and latitudes so dazzlingly spare and clean that the spirit can discover itself like a once blind man unbound. The gaps are the clefts in the rock where you cower to see the back parts of God. They are the fissures between mountains and cells the wind lances through. The icy, narrowing fjords splitting the cliffs of mystery. Go up into the gaps. If you can, find them. They shift and vanish too. Stalk the gaps. Squeak into a gap. And the soil will turn and unlock more than a maple, a universe. So the gaps are the thing. The gaps are the spirit's own home. So gaps are openings, right? So the gap provides an opening, a space of possibility. So in this retreat here together, we're in the gap. We're in the gap. And the gap, as I suggest, has a kind of power to it. Hard to get to the gap. Usually our lives are so filled, they're just so packed in that there's really no space. There's no space at all. Just go from one thing to the next and things get really layered like barnacles growing on the bottom of a boat. They just, you know, agglomerate one thing on top of the other. So glad that you're here for dropping into silence, the heart of silence, because that allows for the possibility of stalking the gap. So gaps as apertures, gaps as openings, gaps as a possibility of moving through, right? You move through a gap. Of course, you know, if you're a sports fan, I mean, you know, if you're a ball player, you try to hit the ball into the gap, right? Like between the shortstop and the third baseman. Or if you're a running back, you look for the gap to gain yardage. Or if you're a volleyball player, you're going to spike the ball into the gap, right? So the gap allows for progress in a way. But how do we get to the gap in a spiritual sense? How do we get into the gap? Well, we could, of course, think that the gap is the space between the breaths. That's a really good way to bring in the gap. So between the top of the inhale and the beginning of the exhale. Or maybe even more powerful, between the end of the exhale and the beginning of the in-breath. Or maybe somewhere in between, like in the course of the inhalation, you introduce a gap, like we do in Viloma Pranayama. So you inhale partway and then you pause. So the gap in the breath, the gap in the in between thoughts, that's another great way to bring in the gap. So what's that space like between thoughts? That's a really good place to mine, to really explore. But oftentimes, of course, we're only going to see the backside of God. It's kind of an interesting expression. You know, we don't really see the front side when we go into the gap. It's not like it shows up like maybe like we'd like it to. So we don't really know as we go into the gap. We don't really know what's going to be there. And if we kind of try to identify what comes up too quickly, then it might lose its power. So there's a kind of mystery. I mean, she suggests that there's a mystery in the gap. Now, Annie Dillard is a wild cat. By the way, I had breakfast once with Annie Dillard. She has a home in Wellfleet, Massachusetts. And just down the street from our family home there, and she drives a yellow sports car, and she, you know, she's like, you go into her kitchen and things are just everywhere, you know, you've got like dried plants hanging off the ceiling and coffee cups and, you know, dishes and books stacked on end and glasses and cigarettes. I mean, Annie Dillard would not want to sit in silence for 4 days, put it that way. You know, she's like, she's a wildcat. But she stalks in her own way. And I think we all, it's really individual. It's like what's it like for us individually to go into the gap? It's very subjective. It's a very personal feeling. It's a very personal experience. And so, in a practical sense, maybe before we get more into that mysterious side, enigmatic side of the gap, in a practical sense, the gap can help us off the mat kind of to avoid getting caught up in reactivity. So when we don't have a sense of the gap, then we get really just reactive, you know, in our life. Like, oh, no, it shouldn't be that way. Or, oh, shut up. Or, oh, don't do that. Or, oh, I'm bad. Or, you know, it's my fault. You know, we get so quick to judge or react. And so then there's no space to be and sense what needs to happen and what may be best. So reactivity comes out of a feeling of confinement in our mind heart. You know, we just don't have any space to reflect or come back to bodhicitta, come back to the awakened heart mind. So when there's the gap, when there's that space in the course of our daily life, then we can be more responsive. So less reactive and more responsive. And we just don't solidify as much around the subject-object split. When we become reactive, we're like, the person over there, and I'm here, and like, we get our armor up, and we get more, we get more defensive, or we get more judgmental. So the gap, that space allows for the possibility of change. Not so divisive. The reactivity, levels of reactivity, kick in that subject-object split where we are at odds. And that's not good for us. Not good for our heart, not good for our thyroid, not good for our digestive tract. It's not good for anyone. Not good for the other side as well. So bringing the gap into our daily life is really what this work is about. That is, when you go into the gap in this silent retreat, it's going to give you like fuel, meaning like a perspective to be able to be in the world without lashing out, or taking everything so personally, or getting caught up in cycles of blame. That'll be really helpful for you, really healing on lots of levels. So, of course, now the gap is that transition. Maybe you got up at 5:30 this morning because that moon was so powerful. That gap between the night and the day. See, yogis celebrate the gap between the daytime and the nighttime. It's beautiful. We can sit together when the sun goes down for this retreat because the sun is setting so early here in December. Here in northern New Mexico. And so the Sunday, S-A-N-D-H-I, the Sunday is the dawn or the dusk. And that's really the best time to practice. Really every morning at dawn, you should practice. You can be in practice. I mean, sitting practice, that's ideal. Sometimes I'm sitting, actually I oftentimes just sit here in the temple space and sitting and the sun comes up and there's just this like, whoosh, it's hard to describe, but something just goes whoosh, like whoosh. Something just shifts just by way of that transition from day to night. And then it begins, 45 minutes before the sun comes up. So capture that in your own practice, the Sunday, because that's the gap. That's the gap where the spirit lies. Now, the other way, of course, to look at the gap is the bardo state between birth and death. And this is a really potent place to be. Now, you have all experienced, and some of you shared this yesterday morning, your own experience with loss, your own experience with death, the personal death or transpersonal death. And that allows for the possibility of change and growth and becoming. We don't get anywhere without the experience of death. But when we're in that bardo, in the gap between the life and the death, there's a kind of potency there. That's why I think if I weren't a yoga teacher, I work in hospice. Because they're the shepherds. They're really the shepherds. I mean, yoga teachers kind of shepherds too. Therapists kind of shepherds. But they're the real shepherds. Help people through that portal between life and death. And I was mentioning yesterday in the opening circle that, you know, I was with my dad when he died. And it was so interesting, of course, because I thought, you know, I was with him. I have two bros. So I'm in the middle of three boys. And my mom was there. Well, it was so powerful to be there as a family. And I'm like, you know, I know like all these cranial techniques and, you know, so in helping with the diaphragm and releasing the, you know, the helping to release the feet. And so I thought, you know, I started to kind of cradle my dad's heels or cradle his head. And I thought, okay, so I can get really, you know, I can help my dad at this point. And then I realized it was totally foolhardy. It was totally absurd to think that I could assist this process at all. It was like, I was like being Mr. Fix-It, you know. It was like ridiculous. I mean, what was happening was so far beyond my little small imagination. So far beyond the gap between life and death. So what I did is I just went into the gap. Just be there. What else can you do? Is you just be there and you witness. You bear witness to the passing. It was very, very powerful. And so when we're in that gap in our meditation between breaths or between thoughts or between periods, don't try to mend it or make it one way or the other. Then the gap loses its potency. It loses its strength. And this is tricky because oftentimes we try to fill the gap, you know. So the gap works because it's a gap, right? That's how the gap works. It's because it's a space. Now, I really love, of course, this passage from Thomas Merton, you know, who wrote, "The contemplative life must provide an area, a space of liberty, of silence, in which possibilities are allowed to surface and new choices beyond routine choices can manifest." So the contemplative life must provide an area, a space of liberty, he calls it, of silence, in which possibilities are allowed to surface and new choices beyond routine choices can manifest. So here's the good work. Drop into the space of liberty and let it do its good work. I mean, it's all about getting out of your own way. I mean, good luck. This takes, you know, this is a good 10-year project. It's not easy. Like, how do we get out of our way so that the potency of the gap, the shakti of the gap, the anima of the gap, that vitality of the gap can do its good work? How can we get out of our own way? That's the project. Lastly, another way to consider the gap, of course, is like right here. See, this is the line of sight window that we put in this temple because that's the Brahma Sutra. See, that's the in the Ayurvedic cosmology of the building design. The vastu, there has to be an opening through the central channel, otherwise the spirit doesn't flow. So we carve these two line of sight windows, these two gap windows, so that the central channel is open. So then, the windows, the doors, the skylights are portals through which we can move. So I just want to say a little bit about windows and doors and threshold spaces. So oftentimes we'll dream about a window. It's very common. Doors, come up to a door, the door opens or doesn't open, or the window, you know, you're peering out of a window, or and so the threshold spaces, kind of where we are, we're in the threshold, this is what this week is about. You're going to be there in the threshold, and then windows and doors might just open. So be ready for this possibility of the aperture opening. This is from James Hillman's book called Dream and the Underworld. It's published quite some time ago, I think in the 75. James Hillman's The Dream and the Underworld. And he talked about doors and windows this way. He said, doors and gates are the places of going through, of passing over, as once called in the Victorian times. They are the structures that make possible a rite of passage. The underworld perspective begins at the gates of entry, where entry signifies initiation. At the beginning, one must move into the genus face double nature of the gate, so that everything within is able to be understood. The gates make possible the underworld perspective. So think of all of the meditations that were in this week as these windows or these, you know, these gates, and just let them be open. Just let them be open. Of course, I wanted to bring in a dream that I had. It was just actually a few nights ago. Very potent dream about a window. I'll just share a piece of it. December 9th, I dreamed I was in a room where a ritual was taking place. I participated in smoking tobacco, along with others. Outside, a huge hawk appeared, its wingspan fully extended, exposing its belly and underside. I saw this through the opening of a great window. The hawk was vivid, and its colors were barred with exquisite patterns. And so there I was like standing, it was a big window actually, it was like, I don't know what we call it, bay window, you know that bay, like big window. And it was on the other side of the window, and I saw this bird appear in the dream. It's very powerful, super powerful. Then, of course, it reminded me of the morning that Surya came back from the hospital right after giving birth to Ina. That morning was like, it was kind of about this time, it was like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and Suri was on the couch with Eno resting up, and so I needed some air because it was, you know, gosh, being in the hospital, the whole thing was like, was just like a whole head spin, experiencing the birth. I was there for the birth, and, you know, just the whole process, checking out. We finally got home, I needed some air. So I go outside, back behind the house here. I walk down into the royal, and this bird swoops in. It's like up on the branch. I didn't really see it. It was kind of like a backside of God thing. I couldn't really see it, but I knew it was there. So then I walk back up to the house, and the bird lands on the gutter of our house. I hear it's like talons, like, you know, we have these metal roofs, so it's very evident. And it was a bird of prey. And I was like, oh my God. I mean, bird of prey, they don't like land on your roof. that generally doesn't happen. And it was this bardo moment, right, in the birthing of our son. It's like, wow, this moment of this appearance that came through. And so through the door, through the doorways, through the windows, or through the wardrobe, I mean, you think about the Chronicles of Narnia, you know, C.S. Lewis, published in 1950, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I mean, it's like that wardrobe, that doorway is a threshold. That gap is a threshold where we can move through. So what do we do when we go? That's really the good question. What do we do when we're in the gap? Well, just as much as you can this week, let it be. You know, don't try to fill it up. Don't try to, like, grasp it. Or, you know, just kind of let it be. So I wanted to bring in, of course, Rainer Maria Rilke in his collection on Letters to a Young Poet. Really beautiful little passage that he wrote into a student of his and dear friend. And he wrote, "Dear Sir, as well as I can, have the patience with everything unresolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now anyway, because you would not be able to live them quite yet. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. Perhaps you do carry within you the possibility of creating and forming as an especially blessed and pure way of living. Train yourself for that. But take whatever comes with great trust, and as long as it comes out of your will, out of some need of your innermost self, take it up upon yourself and live it." So this idea of not like searching for the answer or figuring it out, just allow that space of liberty, Merton's space of liberty to be. Okay, so let's go.